Luckily for you, the answer to the great question of life, the universe and everything is to be found in this podcast, A Worker's Guide to Everything. Sometimes cans, often bad language, always solid politics. This is the Trademark Belfast podcast. Listen out for Trademark regulars and very special comrade guests and fellow travellers talking all things lefty, Ireland and the world. We remain, as always, anti-sectarian, anti-racist and anti-fascist. Enjoy. Buenas tardes. Hello and welcome once again to Trademark Podcast. This is going to be the first of 2022, a brand new year. We're here today with comrades, good friends of Trademark, actually, over the last number of years. And we're here today to talk about Trademark, weirdly, because it's the 20th anniversary of the founding of the organisation. And Alice, who runs Trademark, she doesn't see it that way, but it's the truth because she handles all the money. And if Alice is ill or doesn't turn up for work, we're fucking screwed. She wanted to do a 20-year kind of anniversary event of Trademark, and we can't do it because of fucking COVID. So we thought we'd do a couple of podcasts and talk to some friends and just to commemorate the 20 years of the organisation. We've been here a long time. I've been in from the start, and there have been a lot of very good people worked in it over the years. And we're here today to talk with comrades about the organisation and its influence and their experiences of it. So I hope you enjoy the next half an hour. I'm going to go, I'm joined by, so tell you who's here, really. John Barry, of course, a regular, another regular, Steve Baker. Less of a regular, as you should be on more, Kerry Fleck, good comrade. And of course, Gibbo from The Week at Work, sometimes known as Dave Gibney, communications person or something like that for Mandate, the trade union, who have just recently won a fantastic victory in Duns, by the way. We may even talk about that later on, Dave, but I'm going to go to John first. And we're going to kick off with, because it's nearly a year, believe it or not, I can't believe it actually, in about 2 weeks, it's a year anniversary of the passing of Mel Corrie, who died from COVID on 13th of January last year. So look, we'll kick off with a couple of words about Mel, John, if you don't mind, to commemorate the geezer. Let's talk about, we're talking about Trademark, and Mel was a big, big part of that for the last 15 years.
Oh, thank you, Stefan. That's lovely, you know, to be able to commemorate both Trademark and Mel, and indeed, we can have a hobby to Big Joe, Uncle Joe Law. I think I first came across Mel when Greg Satno from Unite invited me to come and address in the Belfast Unemployed Resource Centre, a Morningstar reading group. And that, I think, was the first time I met Mel. And he scared the life out of me, actually, because here I was, alpha male professor, as poor Kerry would know. Actually, Kerry had to suffer my teaching at Queen's for a short time. But I remember Mel just sat there, and he had this way about him of sizing me up or appraising me, you know, in terms, I felt like I was being interviewed in terms of me. I don't know what even I was talking about, probably some eco-socialist stuff or whatever. So we had this kind of austere presentation, and I remember him asking some really, really good questions. But then he had this warmth then, something shifted then. Once I had passed, I don't know what test I felt like I was being tested, and I had passed it. And once I passed it then, he was very warm and so on. So for me, he was that classic kind of working class autodidact. It was always an issue, and you're going to talk about it, Stefan, the way in which, you know, many of us have gone to university, formal education and so on. Whereas people like Mel and indeed Joe, they learned their politics not through lectures and seminars, but in factories, in offices, on the streets. And it was a very different experience. I'll just finish by saying that for me, it was always a kind of a sense checking with the likes of Mel and Joe. In terms of the kind of more academic route, and the way I got into Marxism and socialism and so on was largely through university and, you know, critique and theory. Whereas in the likes of Mel, you had this, you know, a working class fighter, you know, an intelligence there. And the last thing I'd say, the second last thing I'd say, I've already said I'd say the last thing, it's the second last thing I'd say, which is that if there's going to be a fight, I definitely want to be on Joe and Mel's side.
Yeah, Mel was a... I remember being in the party premises once on the May Day, and someone was giving people shit. He was pissed, and he was acting the goat. And Mel, I looked at Mel, and Mel just, I sort of nodded and said, look, you're going to have to deal with this geezer. And Mel grabbed him. I know those times you see people being grabbed by the scruff of the neck, and their toes are just lifted off the ground slightly so that they're kind of like running in midair. And Mel just walked this bloke out of the fucking premises and down the three flights of stairs and out into the front door. And he never came back, obviously, like, because he could certainly handle himself. Gibbo, what about you, mate? What about Mel and you? You knew Mel for a good long time as well.
Yeah, I've known Mel, I suppose, as long as I've known you as well, in person. I knew he's online. I don't know if he was new. I knew he was online when I lived in Australia. I was following Twitter account from over there, but physically met Mel for the first time in the CWU headquarters when you guys came in to give mandate staff a briefing about the reason for the economic collapse and the financial disaster that I see a smile in there. I know why you're smiling, but yeah, no, that was the first time I met, which is, and immediately to both of you, actually, I think I took, we hit it off almost straight away. But with Mel, a little bit similar to John, I found him a little bit aloof to begin with, as if I was being interviewed, as if there was something you needed to pass before he'd open up. And he is one of those people who could just sit there quietly and say nothing while you're talking, and you just feel, oh, fuck, I need to say more. I need to say more. And he leaves that gap. And I know it's a good communist trait of, like, if you leave, if you stay quiet, they're going to say something that'll either hang them or else it'll be the reason that you'll get on in the end. So we got on after that anyway. We had a couple of chats at that and it was fine. But where I really sort of became close to Mel, I suppose, was the Pat O'Donnell Forum trip when we went down to Cork. I met him in Dublin. We drove down the 2.5-3 hours to Cork, and then same on the way back. But we had a bit of crack that night. It was just the two of us in the car. We had a couple of pints after the opening of the forum. And when we went back to our digs, which was in UCC, Mel had lost his key to his room and it was pissing rain outside. And he had no room to go into, but he was wandering around in the cold and the rain looking for the security guard to give him a spare key. He, of course, couldn't find it. So he came back to my room begging, can you let me in? Can you let me in? And I let him in. And I says, you have a choice here. you can sleep on the couch or we can go top to tails. And he says, fuck you, I'm getting onto the couch. So it was actually on that trip. And I know I'm not talking about the politics specifically here, but it was on that trip when we were coming home. That interesting fact, but we were talking about our family histories, and his family came from a town in Cavan called Ballina, where my family came from 100 years ago as well. And since then, I've spoken to Conor McCabe, another regular on both podcasts as well. And his family come from Ballina in Cavan as well. So there's all these socialists just popping up out of this little one little town, and which has a population of about 400 people. But we all seem to emanate from this little town. But anyway, yeah, it was a lovely trip. And Mel, one thing I'd say about him just to finish off on it is that, and one of the reasons I really like Mel and got on well with him, is that he never veered from his beliefs and his principles and stood by them, no matter how much pressure was put on him. And that's something I admire in anybody.
Cheers for that, Dave. We'll have to make a little trip to Barnard, see what the fuck's going on down there, if it's producing so many good lefties. It sounds like a good little town there. Although it does sound as if the gene pool there could do with a bit of deepening as well. Like, we'll leave that one. Next time we meet Dave and Conor McCabe.
There's a lifeguard.
See how many fingers and toes they have, because I suspect there might be a few six-fingered or six-toed people down. Anyway, look, Steve, over to you, mate. Just a quick word about Mel. I know you knew him well and you worked with him and you were regular on the podcast with Mel as well. But what do you remember about the geezer?
I've got to be honest, in some ways I still can't believe he's gone, you know, and partly it has to do with the fact that I used to drop into the trademark offices regularly and he was always there, and I haven't been to the trademark offices really since COVID arrived. And I can remember the last time I seen him in the trademark offices, I'd gone up and it was shortly after the December 19 election, the defeat of Corbyn and the election of Boris Johnson. And I think you were there, Stevie, as well. And I must have had a face on me as long as a Lurgan Speed. I mean, I was fucking miserable. You know, after that election result, I was gone. I was just couldn't get over that. And I remember coming in and he just looked at me and he sort of said, he must have read the expression on my face. He just said, what the fuck's wrong with you? And I said, Mel, this is awful. I said, this is just, this election defeat is just terrible. I just see 5-10 years of continuous Tory rule ahead of us. And he said something to the effect of, get the fuck over yourself. This is the struggle. This doesn't end. This doesn't stop. And sometimes you need to be reminded of that. You know, you need somebody just to tell you that this happens and you've just got to get over it and keep going. And I subsequently wrote a blog post basically inspired by that conversation. It wasn't really a conversation. It was more an instruction from him. You know, get over yourself and get on with the struggle. I wrote that for the combination. And actually, you know, he echoed then something which another, I mean, Mel was a great musician, and he echoed something which Ewan McCall, another great musician, sort of said in the aftermath of the miners' strike, which was, you know, if you're going to be involved in the labor trade union and working class movement, you've got to anticipate defeats, but you've got to get over that because the struggle just goes on. And I think, you know, in many ways, that's the last conversation I had with Mel, and maybe I couldn't have had a better one.
Yeah, he was good at sitting behind that desk, issuing instructions. Someone who's opposite him for 15 years. Kerry, what about Mel?
Well, I suppose I first met Mel when he was still working for Counteract, I think. And there was a bit of crossover when he was based in the Belfast Unemployed Centre, and I was in there as a volunteer. The first time I met him in a teaching setting, he was doing like a train the trainers session, and I was attending that. And you know, he had a very anecdotal style of teaching, you know, teaching through real life experience and things like that. And at that time, I think I was about 19 and I had a very different life's experience to Mel at that point. You know, I've done A-levels, going to uni, going to work, you know, that kind of route. And to be sitting absolutely gripped by Mel's experiences of working in a factory and how he became a trade unionist and, you know, where how he ended up working for Counteract and then eventually moving on to Trademark. As a young person, I was just completely gripped by that. And from that point on, Mel was always available to me for anything, for a sounding board, for advice, for anything. And as Stevie said, or as Steve Baker says, he's always sitting, he was always in the Trademark offices, and he was always there if you needed to go in and have a moan or a complain or get some advice. And that him being available, and Joe Law was very much the same, him being available to someone like myself, who's quite a young trade unionist at the time, it's invaluable, because his experience of coming up through the trade union movement is wildly different to mine, because the trade union movement is a different place today than the one that they came up through. And those unique experiences that they're able to share with me were just absolutely invaluable. But just on, on a more personal lighter note, I do recall the incident in May Day, Stevie, when you're saying when he removed someone, you know, from the premises, because I was on the landing of the stairs and this young fella sort of appeared coming backwards with Mel attached to his scruff, you know, marching him out the door. And Mel released him and says, right, you fuck off. And he started going, right, come on, man, the Mel. And Mel went, really? And he went, looked at Mel's stature and went, no, you're right. And just scurried off, never to be seen again. But just another very quick one about Mel. One of the last times I seen Mel, he had been going up to teach in a Monkstown Social Club. And he was up there teaching political economy. And I think it was the first day he was going up, he was a bit nervous about it. And obviously I'm in Rathcoole, so he decided he was going to call into me on his way up for a bit of, I don't know, comforting or something, or encouragement. Or I don't know if he, you know, felt a bit dodgy about going into Monkstown, but there's nothing I could do about it, you know. But he called in he called in about 4 o'clock in the afternoon. And I was like, when's your class? And he said, 7 p.m. And then promptly sat there for 3 hours. Shooting the breeze, but you know, but he was going into Monkstown and he was nervous about it. And he did call in for me for a bit of reassurance, but he went there and he taught and he did it. And yeah, valuable stuff.
Yes, Kerry. Yeah, he was, I should remind everyone, whenever Mel passed away, I was going through his stuff in the office last January and I found his boxing scorecard when he was under 16 Ulster champion. He was actually a good boxer and I've always wanted to see him hit someone. And I never had that privilege. You know, I wanted to see him just fucking lay someone out. I mean, someone who deserved it, obviously. To me, I'm not a pacifist, me personally, but I'd love to have seen that. And so I always regret I've never seen Mel lay someone out. Dave, you wanted to come in there, mate.
Yeah, no, just when Kerry mentioned about the last time. The last time I saw Mel was, and I think this is testament to him as well, was Mandate. A few of us from Mandate, including the Debenhams workers, came up to protest outside of Debenhams in the middle of the pandemic last year. Mel came down and opened the offices for us to have a little bit of a base for the posters and the banners and all the rest of it. And then he walked down to the picket line where we protested for best part of 3 hours or so. And when I was looking to take the photographs, Mel just edged himself out of there and I says, "No, get in." And he says, "Absolutely fucking not." I says, "Get in. I want to have you in the picture." He said, "No, this is your gig. This is their protest. This is about them raising their voices. It's not about me. I'm not getting into the front of it." So that was just another side of the man, happy to stand in the background while helping others to get their voices heard.
Yeah, he was very much like that. There's a big lesson to be learned on the left. There's a couple of things that strike me, I suppose. One is that the importance of organic intellectuals. I think that was a phrase that Gramsci used, the idea of working class, as you said, John autodidacts people. And Mel did have, by the way, he got a degree in PP, I should say, at the end. He was determined about that. And we were trying to encourage him to go on and do a master's and a PhD, and he's like, fuck off. But he would have done that as well, I think, if he'd had the time. And the other thing is that that kind of battling of the ego, you know, of the individualism that often strikes people in, or that kind of damages the left. People, it's more about them than it is about the movement. It's more about them than it is about their class. And that was never the case with Mel, or indeed with Joe Law, that their class came first. But I mean, it's a big loss to the organisation. Obviously, Trademark's a tiny little organisation. We've averaged about 6 people over the last 20 years. And Joe, of course, one of the founding members, and then Mel came on 15 years ago. And the organisation's weird in the sense that it's a sum of its parts. So when you lose bits of that organization, it fundamentally shifts what the organization can do, what it is, what it can become. It's good in a way as well, because it opens doors, I suppose, and opportunities for the organization to do other things. But John, you've known us for quite a long time. I remember meeting you first. I think it was just post-crash. Probably it's post-2008 we met you. I think, Kerry, you might have been the introduction to that relationship. And we've been very close comrades with John ever since. And we've done some really good work together. But you've known us for a while, John. And what was your first impression of the organization then back in the day? Because a lot of people historically knew Trademark and know Trademark as an anti-sectarian organisation. As Kerry said, someone that does work in Monkstown and Rathcoole and all over the north. But in the last 10 years, of course, our reputation really broadly, particularly online, is one of political education and political economy that goes beyond the borders of Northern Ireland. What was your kind of experience of working with us, and what was your first impressions?
Well, it was remarkable in a way because, you know, although I've been a kind of a theoretical Marxist for a long, long time, I'd never really connected with actually going into working class communities, never really had any engagement with trade unions. And all my experience was book learning, you know, discussing with students and writing academic articles. So for me, it was a salutary lesson. And actually, this is the practice of how you actually generate class consciousness. And not just talk about, but actually do it. And for me, it was liberating. And it's probably, I wouldn't say saved my teaching, but my teaching, even in the academy now, is quite different as a result of that, where, for example, I am much more comfortable using swear words, although at some point I know I'm going to get a complaint from students. But to be able to be in my own skin, because, you know, like many of us, you know, maybe Steve Baker might want to comment on this, when you're a working class person that goes into the academy, which is still very much a middle class institution, you know, I think I'm over the imposter syndrome, which many working class people feel when you enter into that kind of profession. But it's always been there, and I've always kind of moderated how I speak in many ways when teaching. And so for me to be able to work with yourselves in Trademark and go in and, you know, almost give the lectures I wanted to give in the academy, but had the opportunity now with members of my own class, and in particular in helping me, it has to be said, like a lot of Southerners, and maybe Dave Gibney might have a view on this as well, I had a really, really negative sectarian view of loyalist working class people and culture. You know, I just saw them as card-carrying sectarian thugs with no political ideas. And yeah, don't get me wrong, there are people like that. But for me, and I forget what project or initiative it was around engaging with loyalist working class, particularly trade unionists. And for me, I felt ashamed of, here you are, supposedly class conscious, you know, card-carrying Marxist, and yet all my affections and positive views of working class people here in the North were all in the Republican community, you know, partly because of that's the, you know, culture I grew up in down south. So for me, that was eye-opening for me to see, no, there is a loyalist working class tradition that is progressive. Yes, it's been degraded over the years. Certainly, that's something that I think is a great regret. But for me, those two things, being able to speak in my own voice, talk to my own community, class community, that is, on issues that were important to me, and to not feel ashamed of my accent. Because like for a lot of working class people, you know, often we do carry around with this, even though we're conscious that we shouldn't. But it's very hard to overcome that prejudice, particularly, as I say, in the academy, which is incredibly conservative, as you would know, Stefan, but also, you know, Steve would know. People think that the academy is this realm of freedom and liberalism and so on. There are elements of that in it, but I actually felt more free as an academic, as a teacher, in those experiences that were afforded to me through working with Trademark, in terms of talking about issues that really, really matter to people. So you're not just talking about inequality in the abstract. You're talking to people who are fucking, you know, experiencing inequality and so on. So for me, there's been a change in my own direction. And the last thing I would say, partly in relation to Mel, is that I was schooled by Mel in a very salutary, you know, occasion for me. And some of you in the room were there when at one of the, Betty Sinclair winter schools, I came down and gave a talk twice and almost portraying my public shame in having been supportive of, you know, staying within the European Union. And Mel introduced me in a way that really set me up. And I deserved it because I called that wrong. You know, leaving the European Union was and it still is the right thing to do. And I felt a bit like my first experience of Mel, where I felt I was being interviewed. This experience I had in the Betty Sinclair, you know, school was me publicly portraying my shame in terms of having supported a Remain. And Mel introduced me as somebody who he saw on Facebook the night the vote came in. I was pissed and I was on Facebook crying. And Mel basically reminded me of that. And to me, it was that really important grounding again in terms of being able to do it. But I'm proud to say that I came through the experience relatively unscathed, but a lot the wiser as a result of it.
I think, John, you said on Facebook, you're sitting listening to Coldplay. I feel like I'm sitting there listening to Coldplay at Glastonbury and I'm crying. And Mel come in immediately and says, well, if I was listening to Coldplay too, I'd be fucking crying. I think that was the quote.
I was in another tent in Glastonbury laughing my balls off.
Here, look, we're talking about, Steve, over to you, mate. What about your first experiences of working with Trademark? Because again, as John's outlined there, the impact of the organisation's been quite wide considering how small an organisation it is. And there's the impact is both in, I suppose, in terms of its anti-sectarian work over the last 20 years and previous, as Kerry mentioned, the forerunner organisation Counteract, but also in terms of the political education and political economy stuff. And you've seen both sides of that work, of course.
Yeah, I mean, the experience is very similar to that of John's. I mean, the first thing I would say is that any time I've ever been to the Betty Sinclair Winter School that Trademark organised, I always leave smarter than when I arrived. You know, you always leave better educated. And that was the experience. I mean, the first time I went down was to the Double Transition Betty Sinclair Winter School. And it was the one on Double Transition. And I did the typical academic careerist thing. I had been a trade unionist in the past for Transport and General Workers Union. It was a very bad one, it has to be said, for working in a shop when I was younger. And really going to university was kind of a way of escaping that and getting away from it all. But by the time that would be about 2011, I think, 2012, and I seen the thing on Twitter about the Double Transition. It coincided with some of a book that me and my colleague Greg McLaughlin had just published called The Propaganda Piece. So I saw a wonderful opportunity to nip in and try to sell some copies of the book. You know, that's what academics do. You look for an opportunity and you take it. So I turned up basically sort of thinking that I was going to come and talk about this book and impress people. And the truth is, the people who were there were cleverer than I was. You know, I remember Naomi Connor giving this wonderful talk about trying to organise trade unions in the Titanic quarter. Tom Healy from NERI gave this wonderful talk about the political economy of Ireland. Conor McCabe blew me away, you know. And I left that school thinking, I just need to be better. And also, I thought to myself, because at that stage, I was increasingly disillusioned with higher education. You know, you go to conferences, and I used to hang about like a wallflower, you know, with a glass of warm white wine in one hand and a vol-au-vent in the other. And I was miserable. I had no friends at conferences. I didn't know how to network and stuff. But you went to a Trademark event like that, and it was the warmth and the generosity that you were met with, you know. And those, I think, are the marks of good educators. You know, you can't be an educator. You can't be involved and interested in education in any genuine sense unless you have that willingness to embrace people and to share what you know with them. And you find that at Betty Sinclair Winter Schools. And those were the qualities that people like Mel had and that Joe Law had, was to get you in and get. And so one of the best experiences I had on that occasion was the night after, was in the bar afterwards, when the conversation didn't stop, you know, and it wasn't people just trying to sell their latest publication. It was people talking about ideas and about how those ideas might be turned into some sort of action. So that was the first time that I kind of thought, actually, I'm going to have to pick a side here at some stage. You know, I can go with this academic crew and that career and all of that, or I can commit myself to sort of something which seems to be much more important, given the conjuncture that we're in, that Trademark we're involved in. And I made the decision, you know. I think if you want to talk about education and the quality of education and what education's for, you'll find that in and around the events that Trademark have organised, you know, and they keep a torch alive there that I don't think you really find in higher education in the same way any longer. So I don't know what I would have done without Trademark. It basically saved me.
Yeah, there's a John had a great idea years ago, and it was I mean, obviously it's a two-way street. The people we work with and the people like yourselves and other comrades and activists, and things grow out of that interaction. And John had a great idea years ago of the university, the idea that university should be part of the community and should be fundamentally linked into the struggles of us all, the struggle for the class struggle and the struggle to stop the fucking capitalism destroying our life support systems over the next 20, 30 years. And it's a two-way street. We've learned more from you lot than you've learned from us. But I think we always thought that it was our role was about providing that network, just, you know, opening doors to people and joining people together and linking people who otherwise would be stuck in these silos often. It's not just the academic silos, even within the labor movement itself. I remember, Dave will know this one, I remember phoning someone in Congress in Dublin years ago, about 10 more, 12 years ago, about an all-Ireland peace project. And I says to this person, listen, next time I'm in Dublin, I'll pop in and we'll have a chat, you know. And this person says, and I said, well, next time you're up in Belfast, maybe you could pop in and see us. And this person says, no, I won't be in Belfast. And I was like, whatever. And she put the phone down on me. And it was that partitionist kind of mindset is within the Irish labor movement as well. And what we hope we're about is kind of breaking those barriers and introducing people to each other and network across the island. Kerry, what about you? It's difficult for you, I suppose, to talk about Trademark because you've been there from the start. Like, you've been a comrade and friend of ours since when we were in Counteract back in the late 90s.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I was thinking about this the last week or so, but the thing that really strikes me the most is the experience we had around the time of the crash in 2007, 2008. I mean, we know that everyone was very overwhelmed at that stage and trying to get the grips of what had happened, much like what's going on now with the pandemic. You know, people want to know why it happened and how you react to it. At that time, I was secretary of the ICT Youth Committee, and we had a sort of band of very active young trade unionists. We were running around, we were campaigning on everything. You know, we were full of energy and beans, but we didn't really understand why and how this crash had happened or how to react to it. And Trademark tackled that for us by running education programs anytime we liked in any format that we liked. And they took us through it. They explained the political economy, they explained how the economy works, the basics of it. They explained how the crash had happened and the cyclical nature of crisis in the system. I remember one time Stevie trying to explain default swap derivatives, you know, after a couple of pints of two in the morning. But, you know, we were captured by that. And it wasn't only explained to us, it was explained in context. And this is where the trade union movement fits into this. And this is how you, as a young trade unionist, fits into this. This is why it's important to you. And then one further again, how do you respond? How do you organize? How do you agitate around this? And it gave us some confidence not to be overwhelmed by what we were facing, and also not to be put down by the kind of rough and tumble that exists in the workers' movement. It's a tough place to be in. You're a volunteer, you know, you're representing people every day. It's hard enough, but that education, that bedrock of this is why I'm here and this is why I'm doing this, kept people involved in the movement. And 14 years later, all of that that cohort of young people are all still heavily involved in the movement. They're seconded officers or full-time officers, or they're, you know, still running their union branches in the best way that they can find. And that work was invaluable. And again, it was developed much further than by the Betty Sinclair Wintersoons. But I really don't know where we will be. There is a layer of what relatively still young trade union activists and officials who are clued in and committed. And I'm not sure that they would still be there if they hadn't went through that process with Trademark.
Thanks for that, Kerry. Remember them well. Remember those weekends up in Ballantoy, which is the little hostel we used to use up on the North Coast. Dave, you're a representative here from Mandate, and Mandate was really Trademark's first foray, really, over the border. Up until the crash, we've been very focused, obviously, on the peace process and on anti-sectarian work. We still do that work, of course, but after the crash, you know, our world became bigger in the sense that we started talking about bigger issues and bigger topics. And it was Mandate, the Retail and Bar Workers Union that you worked for, that first invited us down over the border. I remember Mel being really nervous actually about going down over the border to teach Southern trade unionists, because Mel said himself he'd grown up in the six counties in the north, and that was his experience, and he found it quite tough. But it was Mandate. I remember, I can't remember what year it was, I suppose about
2013. February 2013, I'll never forget it. just first of all, I wanted to say, because we're on to the Trademark part now, to congratulate you for 20 years, because it's a big achievement to keep the organization going, particularly an organization that has the politics that you guys have all had, which tends to lead to ostracization from certain other parts of the left in Ireland, let's just say. But and again, one of the things, you know, I mentioned about Mel taking a step away from the photograph and the videos that were taken up in Belfast, but you know, it's the unsung heroes and the work that you guys have done. You know, one thing that always, I think I've said it to you before, Stevie, one thing that always sticks in my head or whenever I see in the mainstream media about the heroes that gave us the peace process of Bertie Ahern and Albert Reynolds and Bill Clinton and all these guys, you know, it's the people who are on the ground, who are going into working class communities on both sides of the divide up there that are keeping the process in place since 1998. And that's you guys. So don't give me any of that shit about Bill Clinton leading to peace in the North. They might have been the figureheads, but they're real hard graft is done when you go into those communities and you face down the sectarian nature of what's been built up deliberately by the British state for many years. And it's interesting, actually, that we're on doing this now the night after Bernadette McAlisky, who was just on RTE last night on the Tommy Tiernan show, talking about very similar issues to what happened with Joe Brawley last week, talking about how the Southern state had abandoned the Irish Catholics and Nationalists in the North, and the backlash we got, that Joe Brawley got, and Bernadette probably is going to get some of it as well. But it's really inspirational work that Trademark has done over the last 20 years, and you know, a pat on the back is well deserved. But moving forward from the anti-sectarian work, actually, do you know what? A mix of it, if you remember, in 2013 as well, when I was the secretary of the ICTU Youth Committee down south, we brought up a delegation of about 30 people from the 30 young trade union activists from the south who had no idea about the conflict. Most of them, not all of them, but had no concept of what was happening. And you guys gave them a tour that nobody else in the world could have given them, in terms of one minute we're down on the Ardoyne Road getting a lecture or a speech from one nationalist, you know, someone with a nationalist background, and then 10 minutes later we're over in the Loyalist Prisoners Association here in the opposite side of it. I still have the videos, and I've watched them over the years, you know, Joe Law sitting there giving us talks about what different perspectives were about the EU and different things, and that was so valuable for those young workers who are probably all, I know most of them still, but all still involved in their trade unions. Now they have an understanding of what happened in the North, which they would never have got from reading the Irish Times or the Daily Star or whatever they're having themselves. So that type of work was really important, but it led in on the same event, which was a 2-day event. It led into the political economy stuff, which is you know, myself and yourself and Mel and Sean and Brendan Ogle and others did a tour of the country in 2015. I think I spoke at 30 events alongside you and Sean in particular, from Donegal all the way down to Cove and Cork, about right to water and about the privatisation agenda and the selling off of state assets and the construction of toll barriers within the health service and within housing and all the rest of that stuff. And I think people they know about this stuff in the back of their heads. It's sort of an instinct that working class people that know that they're being screwed. But what you guys do is articulate how they're being screwed, and they're able to join those dots. And again, had that not been in place, and we've seen an emergence of the far right over the last 2-3 years, had you guys not been coming into those meetings and telling people, no, this is what's really happening, then those meetings would have been occupied by far right voices. And that's why it's so important that Trademark does the work that it's doing and then brings it. The last bit I'll talk about is really, because the guys have already mentioned the Betty Sinclair School, but the last piece I wanted to say is about how when you and Mel in particular and Sean joined in at certain events, but the training is did for our shop stewards, for mandate shop stewards, who were workers in Tesco, Dunn Stores, Boots, you know, they'd never got anything like it before. What used to happen was they'd come into a training course and they'd be told, right, you're a shop steward. This is what you're going to do. You're going to take notes at a minute, minutes at a meeting. You're going to, if somebody's being disciplined, this is your steps and all that. But nobody ever told them why they were doing it, why the trade union movement is such an important bastion for equality and for fairness at work and all the rest of it. And I remember having the debate out with the officials at a closed session that we had, where one of the officials was saying, because you were doing what was called the advanced shop steward training, which was stage 3 of the shop steward. So people were coming in and learning how to take notes and do all that stuff. And he was saying, I think it's still too far advanced. And I was saying, absolutely not. This should be step 1. People who become shop stewards should know exactly why they're being shop stewards, understand the economic system that they're fighting back against, the reason why they should be lodging pay claims that would provide for decent standards of living before they learn how to take notes. That's what needs to happen. I got shot down and I didn't get my way, but at the same time, it's a really important debate to be had, and Trademark are at the heart of that. And you know, right to water wouldn't have happened. People would now be paying 500 to 700 euros per week in their bills, or not per week, per year in their bills, for water had it not been for the intervention of Trademark alongside, you know, the trade unions, Unite, Mandate, CW, OPATSI, and who am I forgetting?
You have them. I think you have them all there.
CPSU.
Yeah, there's another debate to be had then. I think we've made about it before, Dave, about the capture of trade union education by CV building and, you know, and skills and the skills agenda, which was a government funded agenda across, didn't just happen here, happened everywhere, you know, but and the absence of political economy and political education, and not just in the labour movement, across the left generally. Kerry, you wanted to pop in there quickly?
Yeah, just very quickly, just on the weekend that Dave's talking about, we brought young trade unionists up to Belfast for the weekend. I mean, that originated because we had been at a young trade unionist school in Carlingford, if you remember, Dave. And the whole theme of discussion was around how we're going to build a better Ireland and a better future. And the North never got one single mention, and the problems in the North never got one single mention the whole weekend. And at the end, I just put my hand up and said, right, how many people here have been North, you know? And there was a bit of squirming about. And then I was being a bit, you know, dramatic. And then I said, how many people here are Protestant? And nobody knew what, the jaws were all on the floor then. They were like, oh, why are you bringing this up? And I said, you've neglected to debate the future of a whole portion of this island that needs discussed. And I think, you know, so out of that, we managed to convince a lot of them. We went, right, okay. And they came up for the weekend in Belfast. But the day we arrived at Trademark that morning, when they were arriving, there had been a bit of trouble the night before. And there was a helicopter circulating above Trademark along the peace line, and Mel was going, we got that arranged, you know. but it was an invaluable experience, I think, as Dave says.
Well, John, in terms of that kind of wide influence of Trademark, I suppose, on the left, or and also that wider, not just on the left, but on the red green kind of networks that we've been trying to build over the last couple of years, tell us a little bit about that, mate.
Well, for me, I always view these organic political education projects, and Trademark is definitely pioneered. It is the premier organization on the island for listeners for organized political education.
No one here is disagreeing with that.
But it's, to me, it's like the old Irish tradition of the hedge schools, where it's that networking in terms of bringing people together who wouldn't normally be brought together. We've already spoken about how I feel I've become more radicalized in the sense that being able to connect the theoretical academic side of understanding Marxism and a critique of capitalism and so on, you know, actually talking to people who are actually doing it. I think Trademark has been that bridging. And in some respects, it has been, you know, holding a light in terms of the mixing metaphors, the old mole of history. I mean, the reality is at the moment, you know, the political forces are, I think, stronger than they were, perhaps in terms of, you know, an appetite for much more revolutionary, and that absolutely should be the language we're talking about. A revolution is needed in terms of the quickening pace of, you know, the ecocidal destruction of our, you know, our home on the planet. And I think Trademark has brought together, you know, people who perhaps have been on their own for quite some time. And, you know, certainly I would resonate with what Steve Baker was saying, that often people like myself and Steve are as welcome as a fart in a spacesuit, often in the academy, for, you know, raising issues of, you know, importance around class consciousness, not being afraid to talk about inequality. Forget about bloody poverty and social exclusion. The real issue is the, you know, the maldistribution and the unequal distribution of resources, you know, in society and so on. You know, the reality is that the likes of Trademark, I think, have brought together elements of the academy. For me to be able to see in the likes of, you know, whether it's Conor McCabe, who I absolutely think should be, you know, a professor, he deserves it more than even somebody like me in terms of, you know, being able to really bring that big brain of his to, you know, on these big, big issues that we need to understand today. And I think Trademark can take some credit for that. I actually think that Right to Water, that the way that campaign, you know, was led, was partly to do with some of the work that Trademark has done. I actually think, just to finish, that this hedge school idea, or being able to have a network loose and flexible that people drift in and out, we don't often meet each other. It's not a formal organization that of a network that Trademark has created, but it's brought together fellow travelers, people who, you know, we don't all agree on everything, but there's a respectful element of disagreement that it you know, is legitimate, and, you know, we can have fulsome debates and so on. Certainly I've experienced that and benefited from it. But I think now, and it partly touches upon what Kerry was saying, in the context now of the inexorable momentum now towards a border poll and talk about a reunified New Ireland or whatever it is, I think Trademark can take some credit for you know, raising those issues of class, those issues of, well, what would this New Ireland look like in terms of the political economy? Forget about the romanticized, you know, 11 o'clock nationalism that you often get in a lot of Republican, you know, dreamy-eyed views of a reunified Ireland. There's some really, really hard issues that need to be addressed around the political economy of what a reunified Ireland would look like. How do we engage with, as Kerry mentioned, you know, Protestant, Unionist, working class, loyalist people who are either fearful or don't want this? How are we going to engage with that? And I think Trademark has been at the forefront of raising those issues, been a bit like Mel or Joe, that quiet leadership coming out of a strong sense of their own principles, you know, not having been compromised ever. And there's that stalwart, you know, leadership element that I always thought that both Joe and, you know, Mel had. And I think that leadership is still there in this issue. That trade has now left. We are on a movement towards a major change on how the constitutional status of this place, this island, is going to be reconfigured. And I think, absolutely, I think the likes of Trademark, even including, for example, influencing almost by a process of osmosis, you know, some voices within Sinn Féin, you know, one of whom is now doing a PhD with me, Sean Fearon. I absolutely know that his view as a member of Sinn Féin, and probably a leading light there, hopefully he won't be too embarrassed of me talking about him when he listens to this, but to see that that class element, which has been often, you know, rhetorically committed to within the Republican movement, that actually has been trademarked, I think, and the experience of people like Sean and me and so on, who perhaps came from that kind of romantic Irish nationalist background, see, there's some really tough issues that need to be addressed here. And Trademark, I think, again, to go back to the hedge school, sowing the seeds, you know, holding the flame for, you know, asking these questions and trying to figure out what it is, absolutely has been invaluable in my view.
Thanks for that, John. I'll come to you, Steve, with this kind of similar question about that, the wide influence of Trademark and its approach to political education, because I remember, I mean, a long time ago now, 15 years ago, using the words capitalism and class in some trade union education sessions, and there was a shock in the room that you'd actually named the system that dominates 99% of our planet. And unfortunately, that's still kind of the case in lots of places. People still talk about the economy, and people still don't address the big issues we're dealing with, particularly in the labour movement. I mean, how, and it's not, I know we're doing a bit of a propaganda piece on Trademark's behalf here, but there's still not a lot of very good political education out there, is there?
You know, and that's why Trademark exists. You know, I mean, it doesn't simply exist because of the genius of the people involved in it. You know, it exists because there's a kind of a gap and an absence. And it's you know, John's talked about it, Dave and Kerry have talked about it. There's something that was needed and required at a particular moment, and Trademark were able to speak to that. So there's a kind of an absence. And if you sort of think about, you know, we can see the consequences of producing a kind of an environment and a society in which there is an absence of political consciousness and political education. You can see that all around us. You can see it in our response to climate change, which is like, this isn't really an emergency because people haven't got the education and the imagination to deal with that problem in front of them. You can see it with the problem around growing inequality. There just isn't the education, there isn't the language, the discourse that allows us to begin to do it. So there's a kind of an absence there. It's an absence in our politics, it's an absence in our media and culture, and it's an absence also in education. It's an absence in where people like I and John kind of work. That's not to sort of say there isn't good work done in higher education, but very often that good work is done in spite of the higher education industry that we work in. You know, so Trademark sort of were there, and there was an absence, there was a need for the work that they were doing. And maybe we can just all count ourselves particularly fortunate that there was a group of people who were able to make that happen just at the time that it needed to happen. And also, I think it's worth thinking about, you know, that transformation from Counteract to Trademark that takes place, because not having witnessed it, but I can imagine, you know, there is a moment when there's very necessary work around trying to develop a kind of a peace process and trying to develop an anti-sectarian politics in the north here. But there comes a moment also when it's no longer enough just to talk about how you build better relations between Protestants and Catholics and nationalists and unionists. There comes a moment when, after that crash and the failure to deliver a kind of peace dividend, that you need another type of education which can begin to speak to those broader political and economic questions, which you can't deal with within a kind of community relations framework, you know. And there was nobody doing it except for Trademark. So in many respects, you know, the kind of political education which Trademark have pioneered is pioneered by, I assume, because nobody else is doing it. And that, in a sense, is now that I think there are other allies starting to develop there. But, you know, it was that gap, and it was the absence, and it was the consequences of that absence, the political and economic consequences of not being able to talk about these ideas, of not being able to think in new and innovative ways about the problems that we were confronted with, that made the type of political education that Trademark are offering really important. Important for people like me and John, who work in higher education, important for people like Dave and Kerry, who are working in trade unions, and the importance of bringing us together into a kind of dialogue so that we can begin to talk about that. And that's what Trademark did.
Cheers for that, Stephen. It still amazes me, though, and that back to that question of, you know, how, you know, in many ways in Ireland we're a big fish in a very, very small pond. Because if you Google left-wing political education or political education or trade union political education, you don't find very much of it. And Kerry, that's still a problem, isn't it, in the Labour movement? I mean, the amount of times and Dave knows this very well, the amount of times I've met officials and senior members and general secretaries of trade unions who say, our people wouldn't understand that. That's too advanced for our people. Our people wouldn't get that. When we're talking about capitalism, historical capitalism, history of capitalism, we talk about the stock market, and we talk about the various aspects of how the world is owned by quite a small group of people and how that sets up class dynamics. And there's still a problem, isn't there, Kerry, in the Labour movement of doing good political education for our members?
Well, I think the problem is that it's maybe just never seen as a media priority, and because many trade unions are and officials and members are just fighting immediate day-to-day battles that always in their heads are urgent and immediate and need dealt with straight away. So where would you find the time to think about the bigger picture? But of course, as we know, it's thinking about the bigger picture that ultimately gives you a better base to tackle those things and to tackle them better in a more inventive, more imaginative way, and to make links to other people, which make you stronger and make the movement stronger. But that's the trade union movement is in a very tough position at the minute. So it's not always easy to see that.
Yeah, well, we always say it's always the first thing that falls off the agenda, though, isn't it? Political education, whether it's a trade union or whether it's a left-wing political party, it's the last thing on the agenda, or it's the first thing to fall off the agenda. Dave, over to you, mate. What about the impact of political education on members in trade unions when it does go well, when it's given the time and space it's needed, when you can get workers together outside of their workplace? Is it worth it? Does it work?
Yeah, I absolutely. Alongside Trademark, and obviously I'm working with Fermanagh Trade Union, but I've worked on, we mentioned the Right to Water campaign, we did the roadshow tours, but that was also integrated into the trade union education we did. So we had slides when we were presenting to the Tesco members, the Dunnes members, slides showing them why we're opposed to water charges and the water privatisation agenda and all that goes with that. And that was a campaign that we won to date. They are going to bring in water charges again, but it was a significant kick in the teeth for the Irish state and for the capitalists that were trying to buy our water system, right? But also we won legislation. Those members in Dunnes had insecure contracts of employment. And when we went and did the training courses for them to educate them about why we were lobbying for this new banded hours legislation, and that was implemented in 2019, people knew who they had to lobby. They knew who the decision makers were within the political system that they could then put pressure on in the run-up to an election to improve their own lives. That was the impact that Trademark had on the political education side of it. What's really important to understand for people is that workers, you know, while it might be, you know, a shift of 9 to 5 in a retail outlet, their lives don't end in terms of trade unionism the second they clock out. It continues. And that's why it's important. There's no point in winning pay increases of 3 or 4% if you're going to allow the government to come in and bring in water charges and take that money back out of their pockets, or allow the free market housing system to explode so that you're worse off now, even though you won a 3% pay increase. So all of that stuff the Trademark teaches the members gets them to understand that being a trade union shop shooter activist doesn't end the second you clock out. It continues into your personal life. And that, God knows how many dinner tables people who've done the mandate training course have gone home and said to their husband or their wife, Jesus, you want to hear what we heard today about the, you know, the Anglo-Irish bailout? Like, Jesus, I never thought of it in that way, because that's not how it was presented in the media, you know? So that was another big win on the banded hour legislation. But I mean, last week, not even a week ago, Dunnes workers won a 10% pay increase on foot of a pay claim that we put in just over a year ago. And they campaigned politically, lobbied, they got active, they ran petitions themselves. It was a member-led campaign. Again, a lot of these people, Stevie, you'd know them from the training courses, the people who were on the Dunn's National Committee. And that pay increase is on the back of seven consecutive 3% pay increases. So since 2013, since Trademark has been involved with Mandate, right, because that's the first event that I met, is 2013, those workers have won a cumulative 35% pay increase at a time when inflation was at 5.8%. That's why it's important for these workers to go through these types of education so they can understand. Like, there's no other worker, almost no other worker in the state or group of workers who are better off to the tune of 30% when you factor in inflation over the last 7, 8, 9 years. And that's not, I'm not saying it's directly down to Trademark, but it's an important part in opening the workers' eyes to the system that they're operating in. But can I just add a final point there as well, because everybody sort of touched on it. I wouldn't know any of the people on this call if it hadn't have been for Trademark. I wouldn't know John, I wouldn't know Stephen, and I wouldn't know Kerry. I might know you, Stefan, but I wouldn't have known them. And while you mentioned at the start of the program that Trademark, you know, has 5 or 6 on average staff members over the periods of the years, Trademark is much bigger than that. I know you wouldn't be able to say this, but I'll say it. I mean, these guys who are on this call, but there's so many more: John Hillary, Anne Pettifor, Conor McCabe, Paddy Mackle, Dooley Hart, Kelly O'Dowd. There's a whole heap of people who wouldn't know each other had it not been for Trademark. So Trademark isn't just an organization. It's a fulcrum. It's a hub. It's a linchpin to the left across these islands and wider across the world, because it brings in a credible political economy training course and joins the dots where nobody else is doing it. Going back to what Stephen was talking about there as well.
Cheers for that, Dave. Steve, you wanted to come in there, mate.
I just thought it was really interesting what you said about the response that you get sometimes when you offer a political education, you know, and you get that kind of response that our people wouldn't understand that. And you kind of ask yourself, who are these our people? Because our people were, you know, Joe Law and Mel Corey, they got it. We're our people. You know, there's this kind of notion, isn't there, that you know, an educated working class voice somehow becomes alien, that education kind of leads you out of the working class and separates you from them and you become an alien. I think James Connolly said something about this at one stage, about the sort of the intervention of socialists is very often sort of seen as coming from the outside rather than coming from within. I think one of the things, you know, one of the biggest lies that you need to get over is this kind of notion that working class intelligence, working class education, working class culture, working class articulacy is in some ways kind of limited. And in some ways, you can look at that kind of post-war period and you get a real insight into just the potential that the working class actually has. You know, no matter how limited it was in that sort of social democratic welfare state settlement after the war, you begin to see, you know, the emergence of the working class and culture and politics. You know, they basically invent popular culture, you know, with the talents of young working class people at that sort of stage. But there's an entire system here which is designed to stupefy working class people. You know, so every time somebody turns around and sort of says, our people wouldn't get that, that's a lie. That's nonsense. I got it. You know, my ma's a factory girl. My dad was a lorry driver. You know, I got it eventually. Joe and Mel got it. We all got it in this call. And so very often, one of the first things you've got to do with political education is get over that kind of initial hurdle that sort of says, not for the likes of you. And it is for the likes of you. That's exactly what political education is for. So nobody needs it more and nobody will benefit from it more.
Thanks very much for that, Steve. Last question, folks, because we're running out of time. We've had a hard year. A lot of people have had a very tough year, and we've had a particularly tough year. And our love and goes out to Fiona, Mel's wife, and the boys, who will be, you know, thinking about him a lot at the moment over Christmas and coming up to his anniversary of his passing. But when you lose someone of Mel's stature and experience, it has a massive impact on a small organisation. And we're still struggling with that, to be honest. Someone said, you know, have you got a replacement for Mel yet? And I said, well, we'd have to advertise for a 56-year-old Logan communist. And there aren't too many of those about. Do you know what I mean? So, as I said, Trademark really is a reflection of the people in it. It becomes the organisation made up of the people in it, and which is good in a way, I suppose, because it means it's organic and we don't know where we're going next and we don't know what's going to happen next. But I wanted to finish on that one, and I'll go to you first, John, about give us a memory you have, a nice memory, a favourite memory of Trademark. And also, if you can, give us advice on what the fuck we need to be doing next, because we're not entirely sure.
I have a couple. One is, although part of it was unpleasant, in that I got absolutely hammered in Joe's house and Brenda's house after the celebration.
I was there. I remember it well.
I thankfully you do, because I don't. All I know is I got back into a taxi and somehow made it back home to Hollywood, but my wife wasn't too pleased. I ended up sleeping on the couch that night. But I do remember my abiding memory of Joe, in a way, was smoking a big dirty cigar and quietly telling me, because as many of you know, I'm mad into the white poppy, partly to challenge the, you know, poppy fascism around the red poppy. And I offered one to Joe and he said, no, son, I'll not be wearing anything, any badges like that. And just the way, he's the only person who ever refused a white poppy actually from me. But the way he said it, I just said, yeah, there's something deep going on here. I'm just going to move on now. So that was a happy memory of being out on the boat on the Laggan with Big Joe with the cigar and so on, you know, gently, you know, refusing my entreaties on the white poppy. And the other one I'll just say, there's a couple that I could say, I'll just mention this one, is that, and I don't know whether I brokered it or whatever. Anyway, Joe and Mel came to the Hollywood Baptist Church to do a course. And it was just absolutely wonderful for me to sit in a room. And there was a couple of hard jaw loyalists there. There were a couple of, I think a couple of local councillors in there. And to see Mel and Joe using flip charts. I mean, it was none of this malarkey with PowerPoints with Mel, you know, and Joe talking about. And again, it was, for me, I never really viewed it like this, but to see that the Protestant Reformation was a world historical moment, and to see it being presented in, not saying it was positive and so on, just saying, listen, we have to recognize what it was. It was part of the evolutionary journey for, you know, society in terms of moving beyond a kind of medieval Catholicism, which dominated everything. But to see it happening in the Baptist church, in a way, was quite something in terms of, I made the decision I wasn't going to, you know, make any statement and so on. This was Mel and Joe's time. And just to see the way in which they were able to work the room, talking in a language that was very, very easily understood by those who were working class people. They weren't students, they weren't academics and so on. And for me, just to see the way in which they used humor, I think maybe Joe in particular maybe moderated his bad language. Mel didn't, because they were in the church. And it was just a joy to see them, how they could, you know, teach in a way that was not condescending. And this is certainly something I think absolutely we do all the time in the academy, where we talk down to people. They didn't do any of that. And it was, you know, a Paolo Ferrari moment of, this is the pedagogy. This is how you teach working class people in a language that they understand. You're not patronizing, and neither are you shying away from the difficult issues of, you know, the conditions of their lives. So for me, that was what I took away from, you know, as one of the many happy memories I have about Joe and Mel.
Cheers. Over to you, Dave. I'm going to come to you next, mate. What about good memories? And also, Joe, John didn't give us any advice here. Maybe he's got fucking nothing to give, but what should we be doing in 2022?
I have a couple of memories there. The first one is obviously the hilarious photographs that I took of Mel trying to wrap himself up on the most uncomfortable couch in Cork, and me pissing myself laughing but feeling bad sort of the following morning when he was trying to shuffle in to give a presentation with a creak in his neck. But the other one that's a big positive memory for me was, again, going back to the roadshow tour, I don't know if you remember, Stevie, but we did an event in either Castlebar or Ballina in Mayo, and we arrived not knowing where it was, because most of the community groups were organizing the events themselves, so they were booking the pubs or whatever. So we arrived in and we were put into a pub, in the back room of a pub, where there was no actual door or anything between us, where we were given the presentation, and the bar where everyone was just drinking. So they had to pull a curtain across. So here we are giving a lecture about, you know, the bailout, while other people are literally 5 yards away drinking themselves silly on a Wednesday night or something. But it was freezing cold that night. And I remember I had to get up in the morning for a meeting in work at 9 o'clock. And I remember zooming down the motorway trying to get home. You were sitting beside me in the car and we were overtaking the de-icers on the road then. Ended up smashing all the de-icing sand shit all over the windscreen and frightening the shite out of me. But it was the reason that's a positive memory is because I felt that night, which was probably the eighth or ninth event we'd done, that we were getting somewhere, because the reception we got, we stayed for a pint behind and we were talking to these punters we'd never met before, who had no connection to me or you or Mandate or Trademark or anything. And they came up and they were chatting with a pint in their hand about how impactful the presentation was. And I thought, Jesus, we're doing something here that could actually change the country. And we don't get credit for it. But if you remember, only a couple of weeks later was an election in February 2016. And one party, the Labour Party, who was in government, lost 80% of their seats. And the Fine Gael party lost 50% of their seats. Now, we had done that across the country, and you know, it's not completely down to the campaign or anything, but it was one of the things that had a massive impact, and it just shows you the potential. So that leads me on to then, you know, advice. I mean, if we could bottle yous and say, and just throw yous into every county across the island, it would be fantastic. But the only opportunity we have to do stuff like that is to expand on the online stuff. And I know this is going out as a podcast, but we've met recently. I know some of the guys in Left Block to talk about potentially expanding Left Block to different podcasts, but also little videos that we might be able to produce. And, you know, we were talking about a 2-minute 20 series where explainers on capitalism, different parts of capitalism, and do them as a series of 15 or 20 in a series of understanding, say, water charges, understanding the stock market. You're already doing that in a podcast, but let's put it into a little video series as well. And then a festival. I'd fucking love a left-wing festival like Lusty Beg, but bigger, because Lusty Beg, you can bring 40 or 50 people together. That the impact of those events, and this is a crossover between the two questions you asked, Lusty Beg is always a positive memory for everyone. If we could expand that and bring in more speakers and have a festival where we bring in 200, 300, 400, 500 people, imagine the impact, because that's what it's all about. It's expanding people with our own mindset. So
cheers for that, Dave. Appreciate that. I remember that journey back from Ballinlough very well. Remember that I actually remember giving the presentation in that boozer as well, and it was a good evening. It's a positive memory for myself as well. And as regards the Left Wing Festival, just watch this space, mate. There's news coming out very, very soon that we'll be talking about. Okay. Kerry, over to you. What about some nice memories there and some advice on what we do in 2022 and beyond?
I just have hundreds of nice memories of Mel and Joe and just Trademark events. I've been that many of them over the years. It really is quite difficult to try and nail down one or two, because I could just be here all night, you know. I think I'll give you two quick ones. We went to Cuba for the 100th anniversary of the revolution in 2009, I think, Stevie. And I have a great memory of Joe Law, and he was pottering down the street in Havana in a Che Guevara t-shirt, pair of shorts with some really dodgy white legs, Shankill Road legs, you know, pair of shades, hat covered in badges, cigar. And he was, you know, 20 feet ahead of us, pottering down the road. And he turned a corner, and there was a group of taxi drivers standing on the corner waiting on fares. And they just absolutely fell about laughing when they seen Joe come. And he didn't even notice. He just sailed on past, you know. It was just perfect. We were killing ourselves. It was brilliant. And another one, of course, is Mel attempting to win a swimming race against yourself, Stevie, and Brian Canfield in the swimming pool. And nearly did too. He nearly did too.
He never got over losing. He was a competitive wee bastard, like, and he never got over losing that race.
Absolutely furious. But they're just two from times we went to Cuba. I think we travelled all over the place together for different events. So there's hundreds of stories, and many of them maybe would require a director's cut, you know, podcast, you know. But I think, yeah, I like the idea of a festival for something you could do, especially, you know, if COVID starts to come a bit under control, it would be a nice way to sort of lift ourselves out of the pandemic with a festival. But I also think, you know, we've talked here about the sort of a ripple effect that the work of Trademark has had on other people, and that sort of loose network of people that are associated to Trademark that exist all around the island, and perhaps just drawing on them a wee bit more and asking them to do a bit more work for Trademark and assist Trademark to push on that message. I think drawing on those a wee bit more could be a nice way to move forward next year.
Yeah, thanks for that, Kerry. We always do try and do that. We always do try and pull in, and there's a couple of them here, John and Steve, who we always pull in to do work for us, of course, for free. We never pay them anything. We might get them a pint the odd time. Steve, over to you for of one of our comrades over the last 10 years particularly, who have been working with us, and it's been a pleasure working with you over that period. But what are you kind of, give us a nice memory there, and as I said before, a bit of advice.
A bit like Kerry. I mean, there's so many good memories, you know, a lot of it to do with, you know, the Betty Sinclair Winter Schools down Lusty Beg were just, they were brilliant fun. you know, they were educational events, but they were great fun to be at. You know, and I say from my first visit down there, had a really profound effect upon me, not just in terms of what I learned, but the people I met and the kind of the warmth and the humor that was there. I can remember one of the things I do remember, Sean Byers, who just has a huge brain on him, like, you know, but I remember being Sean sitting in one of the talks given by the economist Steve King. And Sean and I were really hungover. I mean, really bad. But, you know, I mean, you're not allowed to be hungover at Lusty Beg because you, Stevie, come around and get everybody out of bed. So we had to be there for the Steve King talk. The two of us were sitting beside each other. We're absolutely fucking howling. And Steve King had this really intimate, intricate little PowerPoint display that at one point he had a switch and everything on the PowerPoint begins to move as it shows you how the entire economy works. And it was just too much visual stimulation for me and Sean. And he reached across and he grabbed me by the arm and he went, Stevie, I think I'm having a stroke, you know. And that's kind of been, that's one of the enduring memories, both the sort of education, the hangover and the humor of it. So there's that. I mean, it's been brilliant. I've really enjoyed it, you know, and anytime you ever give me a call, I always look forward to getting a call for something that Trademark are going to do. And I'm always more than happy to do it at the drop of a hat. I wouldn't presume to tell you what I think you should do in 2022, because to be honest, having survived 20 years in this place and still going, he's clearly, as an organization, are doing something right. I like the sound of what Dave's talking about there, the idea of doing sort of short videos. I think they might be really useful if we can't get out of the house for a while longer, is to put together short videos that really condense information and for an audience. And the other thing is, I think Kerry's idea there too of a festival when this is all over, I think we'll be ready for that, you know, something that can combine a bit of, you know, culture and education, which I think are two spheres of life which are intimately linked at the best of time, culture and education.
Yeah, you're right about that, I think. And again, listen here for news coming up about a festival, if we can and when we can. I think you're right about the online stuff. That's really interesting. We've been doing quite a lot of work over the last few months talking about that, but the online stuff only works if your offline stuff is legitimate and credible as well. I think those two things are, one's a product of the other. People listen to you because you have credibility and because you have legitimacy. And I think it's important to stay grounded in working class communities and stay grounded in the labor movement, because that gives you a kind of voice that people want to listen to. And it means the online stuff then becomes more influential. And I've no doubt that our work online is going to be expanding over the next year. But the offline stuff, including the festival, will be happening too. So listen, folks, I want to really thank you for coming today. And thanks very much for your contributions. 20 years in the offing, and hopefully another 20 years to come. And as the old saying goes, I'll see you in the trenches or on the victory parade.
Walkers.
That, comrades, was Trademark Belfast. Thanks so much for listening in. We'll see you soon, either in the trenches or on the victory parade. Upper workers and Slangle Foyle.